Hall of Mirrors. Tales of horror and the grotesque. Written and performed for podcast by Mike Bennett. This podcast is intended for an adult audience. This story contains scenes of violence and horror that are unsuitable for persons of a sensitive disposition. Hello, listeners, and welcome to our final journey into the world of Geoffrey Leach. Walk with me now down to the portal that leads to his unfortunate dilemma. You know, this episode of the podcast is exciting for me, not only because it's the end of our current adventure, but also because it marks the launch of my new website. I'll tell you all about that after the story, when we can both relax in the lounge. Yes, the work on the lounge is finished and the place has been completely redecorated and refurnished, but we can experience that later. But now, as the glass of the mirror begins to ripple and swirl, let's recap on previous events. Geoffrey Leach, in his first life, was a bully with a taste for very young ladies. He died and went to hell, and whilst in hell, suffering terribly at the hands of a demon called Clive, Geoffrey struck a deal with Satan. Under the terms of that deal, Geoffrey has to return to Earth and kill a man. Once the deed is done, he'll die and return to hell. But this time, he will become a demon, immune to the agonies of hellfire and beyond the reach, hopefully, of Clive. However, on returning to Earth, Geoffrey got other ideas. He decided to change his wicked ways and find salvation by spending the rest of his life serving God. Father Matheson gave him a Bible and some guidance, and Geoffrey went off to be a better person. Literally born again to a life of religious piety. But, unfortunately, the devil wants his due, and Clive appeared in Geoffrey's workplace, setting everything and everyone ablaze to remind Geoffrey that he has no life. He belongs to hell, and all he can hope for is to honor his pact with the devil and so become a demon. When last we saw Geoffrey, he was screaming his intention to hold up his end of the bargain, and now, as the glass settles, he's getting ready to do just that. It's night, and the scene is a suburban street. Cars are parked along the side of the road. And there, can you see his face, staring out of the window of that car just ahead of us? Yes, it's Geoffrey. He looks nervous, doesn't he? But then, wouldn't you be? Come on, let's step through into the final part of salvation. That night, Geoffrey sat in his car outside the house of the man he had been sent to kill. He stared at the windows and the front door, tensing occasionally whenever a shadow passed behind the curtains or an upstairs light clicked on or off. He opened his packet of cigarettes and lit one from the one he'd been smoking. What did he have to lose? Lung cancer was the least of his worries. He was dead already. Judgment had been passed and his fate was sealed. The best he could hope for was that his eternity in hell might be more comfortable as a demon. He drew on the cigarette and thought about the things Clive did to him. The torture, the abuse, the tearing and eating of his flesh. Jesus Christ, would he ever be able to do those things to others? To be that way took a special kind of evil, and he, all he'd ever been was a bully, a bit of a pervert perhaps, but he'd never tortured anyone for pleasure. Or had he? It depended on how you define torture. He remembered his wife's suicide note, and his fingers trembled as he drew hard on the cigarette, causing the long ash to tumble onto his jacket. He looked back to the house. Maybe he'd be able to get out of hell sooner as a demon. Maybe he hadn't even been in hell. Maybe he'd been in purgatory. A wave of hope flowed through him, and he flicked on the car's reading light. He put the cigarette in the ashtray and pulled the sports bag he'd brought with him across the passenger seat. He rummaged among its contents, the sound of metal on metal as the knives, hammer and large adjustable wrench shifted around inside. Where was the fucking Bible Father Matheson had given him? The stupid thing was black and Geoffrey couldn't make it out in the poor light. Then his fingers brushed against its soft cover. It was buried under the tools. He pulled it out and opened it under the light. Purgatory! Purgatory! Where the fuck was purgatory? He flicked to the back to try to find it in the index. Shit! There was no fucking index! How was anybody supposed to find anything in this stupid book? He threw it aside and felt fresh tears coming to his eyes. He flicked out the light, threw his arms across the steering wheel, and buried his face in his sleeves. He bit down on the fabric, stifling his sobs, muffling them, hating them, knowing that somewhere Clive was watching him and laughing. Motherfucker! He sat back and punched the wheel. You motherfucker, Clive! I don't want to do this! I don't want to kill! Oh, for God's sake! I don't want to die! I want to live! His thoughts raced. What should he do? If he refused his mission, he'd go to hell and face the wrath of Satan. If he went through with it, he'd still go to hell and become a demon, a monster and a tormentor of others for all eternity. Truly, he was damned if he did, and damned if he didn't. He struggled to weigh the lesser of the two evils, and found them both of an equal, unbearable weight. A light went out in the front room of the house, and Geoffrey's seething anxieties was silenced as his whole attention shifted to the front door. It had a pane of rippled glass set in the centre, and through it he could see the silhouetted shadows of the occupants as they passed, first one, then another, on their way upstairs. The children had been put to bed hours ago, so this had to be the man and his wife going to bed. This was it. A bedroom light went on upstairs. Geoffrey opened the bag and considered its contents. He knew it would be impossible to bludgeon the man without waking his wife, so perhaps he should use a large knife. He could place a hand over the man's mouth and slit his throat quickly and quietly. No, he'd fight. The woman would wake up. Then he remembered. It didn't matter. When the man died, so would he. He'd die and go straight to hell, though, as Clive had said, in triumph. He reached into the bag and took out the hammer, feeling its weight and heft. Yes, it would be very quick. He turned back to the window and watched the light go out. How long should he wait? Half an hour? An hour? He put the hammer back in the bag and lit another cigarette. He opened the glove compartment and took out the bottle of whiskey he'd brought along to steady his nerves. He unscrewed the cap and took a slug. What did it matter if he got drunk? He wasn't going to be driving anywhere afterwards. He looked at the glowing clock on the dashboard. It was 11:45. He'd give them 3/4 of an hour. Then he'd do it. He woke up. Grey daylight revealed an empty whiskey bottle and an overflowing ashtray. He looked at the clock. It was 8:15. The clamour of young children came to his ears, and he realised that this was what had awoken him. Geoffrey looked out of the window. His quarry, a heavy-set man in his 40s, was helping his wife usher the children out of the house and off on their way to school. Geoffrey's face looked like it had aged 10 years overnight, but the sight of the family, alive, happy, and going about the ordinary business of another day, brought a smile to his face that almost wiped those unbidden years away again. Sometime last night, between the parents going to bed and his finishing off the whiskey, he had evidently changed his mind and made his final decision. He looked into the rearview mirror, expecting to see Clive sitting in the back seat, but he was alone. He ran a hand over his stubbly chin and looked around at the passers-by, watching for a ripple of heat or a tendril of smoke from an unseen source. Surely Clive had to be here somewhere. But he wasn't. He must be waiting ahead, around the next corner, or the one after that. Perhaps a shop assistant or a policeman would turn around and there the demon would be. The world would slow down and burst into flames, and Clive would be upon him again, playing with him like a cat plays with a mouse, before leaving him, screaming and writhing alone like a lunatic. Was this how his remaining time on earth would be? Was this the new shape of his damnation? Hell on earth. Then he remembered the one place where Clive couldn't go. The church. He whimpered as a sudden hope shook his heart. He had to speak to the priest again, and this time he'd tell him everything. He turned the key in the ignition and stepped on the clutch. Then he hesitated. What if the priest wouldn't listen to him? To what would almost certainly sound like the ravings of a madman? His hand tightened on the gear stick, and he shifted it slowly but firmly into first. He'd have to listen. Geoffrey glanced at the sports bag by his side. He'd make him listen, whether he wanted to or not. On entering St. Peter's Church, a feeling of blessed safety so overwhelmed Geoffrey that he stumbled back a step. He stopped and wondered if he had mistaken the feeling, if in fact, hell-spawned thing that he was being forcibly repelled by the Holy Spirit. He steadied himself against the doorframe and cautiously reached out into the church. He held his breath, waiting for pain or an inexplicable force that might compel him to withdraw. But he felt nothing other than a divine stillness. He straightened up, composed himself, and walked inside. His sense of sanctuary deepened with every step he took away from the door and the outside world, the world where Clive and others of his kind were able to prey upon his soul and sanity. At the entrance to the centre aisle, he genuflected before the crucified Christ as he had read he should do in the literature the priest had given him. He looked around. 2 or 3 other people knelt or sat at prayer. but there was no sign of Father Matheson. Geoffrey moved to a pew near the front, set down his bag of tools, and knelt to pray. He soon became lost in his prayers, a whispered stream that poured unceasingly from his lips as his body rocked back and forth on his knees. "Mr. Leech?" Geoffrey looked up and saw Father Matheson standing close by. He smiled. "Yes. Hello, Father. I'm delighted to see you here. How are your studies coming along?" "Fine. I..." Geoffrey couldn't think where to begin. "No, actually they're not, Father." His voice began to lose its steadiness as he spoke. "I've a terrible problem." Father Matheson sat down on the front pew bench immediately before Geoffrey. "Please, tell me."
"It's that thing I spoke to you about before. I know you said I needed a holiday, and believe me, you were so right. But a holiday isn't going to make my problems go away. You see, I'm damned. I died and went to hell, and the devil sent me back to kill a man."
Father Matheson nodded. "Yes, I remember. You told me this."
"But there's more, Father. After I left you, I was determined to do as you said, to lead a good life, to study the Bible."
"Good, my son."
"But he wouldn't let me."
Geoffrey tried to hold back his tears.
"He came to me and told me I had to fulfill my contract."
"Who came to you?"
"Clive, my demon. He possessed a woman where I work."
Geoffrey's words began to tumble.
"He brought hell into the canteen and everybody was burning. I was burning. He told me there was no escape and that I had to kill him, to kill the man because Satan commanded it. And I was so afraid. I said I would."
He paused a moment, looking uncertainly at the priest, who then nodded for him to continue.
"But then..."
Geoffrey went on, clinging white-knuckled to the back of the pew before him.
"When I went to do it, I couldn't. I was gonna do it, but he was there with his children and his wife. Oh, God. God help me, Father. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. And now I'm completely fucked. I blown the deal. The devil's gonna be fucking furious with me now. He's gonna drag me screaming and kicking all the way back to hell."
He lowered his head onto his hands and shook with silent sobs. Father Matheson laid a hand on Geoffrey's shoulder. "Mr. Leech, you're clearly going through a dreadful trauma. Have you spoken to anyone at the hospital? The surgeons who saved you?" Geoffrey shook his head.
"No. What can they do? This is beyond them. Only God can help me."
"Well, it's possible that this kind of thing has happened to other people besides yourself. People who've come back from..." Father Matheson hesitated a moment. "From death?" Geoffrey looked up at him.
Do you think that's possible?"
"Anything is possible."
"Really? Then you must at least accept the possibility that what I'm saying is true. That I've been resurrected from hell to kill a man. And now that I haven't done it, Satan's going to be after me."
Father Matheson frowned. "I believe that you believe it, my son. And that if this condition has afflicted you, it may have afflicted others." Geoffrey pressed his hand onto the priest's.
"Father, please. This isn't a medical situation. It's an exorcism situation. I need help. Not from a doctor, but from you. From a priest."
You think you're actually possessed by demons?
No, not possessed by them, but enslaved or something. I've entered a contract with the devil and I haven't kept up my half of the bargain. And now he's going to get me.
You believe the devil will take your life?
Yes, exactly.
And how do you think he'll do this? The devil cannot harm you in life, my son. All he could do to our Lord was to try to tempt him from the path of righteousness, and that's all he can do to any of us.
Really?
Yes, said Father Matheson, encouraged, sensing he was getting through. Our lives are filled with choices, and the choices we make in this life decide our fate in the next. We know the devil can walk upon the earth if he chooses, and he may well do so. But if he does, it is as tempter, not assassin. Temptation is the weapon that the devil wields against us. Turn from temptation and the ways of sin, and you shall be saved. Geoffrey's eyes filled with tears.
Do you think so?
Yes, Mr. Leech, I think so.
Then he can't get me.
Father Matheson shook his head. Not in this world, my son.
But what about Clive, the demon?
I don't know what to say about that. I've never heard anything like it before. I'm not a psychiatrist, but it's possible that he was a creation of your own mind in your hours of uncertainty. Perhaps now that you've decided not to go through with this murder, he may simply go away. The battle to lead you into sin is lost. As long as you stay on the path of righteousness, then, with God's help, hopefully you'll have seen the last of him. Geoffrey's face broke into a smile.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank God. It might be, mightn't it? What you say makes sense, Father.
Father Matheson nodded and stood up. Geoffrey also got to his feet. He felt a need to hug the priest, whether it was appropriate or not. He had never wanted to embrace anyone so much as he now wanted to embrace Father Matheson. He hurried to the end of the pew and came around to stand before him.
I don't know what to say, Father. I feel like a terrible weight has been lifted.
He took the priest in his arms and hugged him.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Father Matheson gently eased him away. There now, Mr. Leech, please. No thanks are necessary. I'm just
a man of God, doing the Lord's work.
A hoarse voice came from the shadows at the back of the church. A figure stood up in the darkness and slowly began to walk towards them down the aisle to the right. Father Matheson frowned.
Do I know you, sir?
Perhaps,
said the man. He had white hair, and he was dressed completely in black. He stopped and turned to face them. Then, as he entered the far end of the pew that Geoffrey had just vacated, his white dog collar became clearly visible. He smiled. Father Matheson frowned.
Father McBride?
But you're
under investigation?
Father McBride continued along the aisle towards them.
Following allegations about myself and certain young boys?
Father Matheson nodded slowly. Yes.
I was, Father, but the investigation has now been, more or less, decided.
Oh? How so, Father?
I was guilty. A case of what you were just telling our friend, Mr. Leech, here about. Temptation. I allowed myself to be tempted. I followed my basest animal passions and did unto others as had been done unto me.
But, Father,
I forgot, you see, the truth of everything we believe in.
Father McBride laughed bitterly and shook his head.
I felt as long as the authorities remained unaware, then I'd be fine. I forgot, or rather ignored, the higher authorities.
He stopped a moment where Geoffrey had been sitting and bent to pick up the bag.
Tools, Mr. Leech? Why do you need tools in a church?
I just had them with me when I came by, said Geoffrey.
Surely you could have left them in your car.
Father McBride carried the bag around to the front of the church and joined them.
I didn't want to leave it unattended.
A smile spread over Father McBride's face.
Of course you didn't.
He looked up at the effigy of Christ on the cross. Both Geoffrey and Father Matheson saw the red mark around his neck.
You seem to have hurt yourself, Father.
Father Matheson touched his own throat to indicate.
Oh, it's worse than that, Father. Much worse. When I woke up this morning, I was hanging by the neck from a light fitting.
Geoffrey's face darkened.
Oh, Jesus Christ, no!
Father Matheson frowned at Geoffrey.
Mr. Leech!
Father McBride gave a low laugh and reached into the sports bag.
Oh, don't talk to me about Jesus Christ, Mr. Leech.
He drew out the hammer.
He doesn't want me for a sunbeam anymore.
No! Please, it's not too late!
Oh, yes, it is, Mr. Leech. For both of us. But at least I won't be burning anymore.
Father McBride swung the hammer in an arc.
Hallelujah! I am your salvation!
Well, poor Geoffrey. It puts me in mind of the old saying, better the devil you know than the devil you don't. Hard to think that an eternity of Clive might be preferable to whatever awaits him now, but let's not dwell on Geoffrey's terrible fate. Let's relax in the lounge.
Actually, no, let's not, because all the news that I was about to give you on this 11-year-old podcast is now completely out of date. The website I was about to talk about, my quote new unquote website, was mikebennettpodcast.com, which has been offline for, gotta be about 10 years, something like that. Maybe less, maybe more, but it doesn't matter. It's all, you know, water under the bridge, isn't it? So I would like, though, to say I hope you enjoyed Salvation and that you're enjoying this re-listen, probably, to the Hall of Mirrors. I will leave you there now, then, and I'll speak to you again very soon on a different podcast, no doubt. Thank you very much, then, for listening. Pip, pip, and cheerio.
MikeBennettAuthor.com.